Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by the Michigan Cherry Committee. Learn about the wonderfully tart Montmorency cherry at choosecherries.com.
Hello, hello, Heritage Radio Network listeners tuning in from 165 countries around the world. Hopefully all the time. This is episode 203 of Tech Bites. We are recording it today on Tuesday, April 7th, 2020, if you're listening in the future, and I know most of you are. This is our fourth show recorded on Zencastr because we are all staying at home during the coronavirus pandemic. And today we are bringing you some stories and some efforts from the chef and restaurant community who is, as always, sprung into action to try and help the industry and also help those in need. I'm very happy today to introduce Chef Edward Lee, who is calling in from Louisville on his Lee Initiative. Ed, thank you for taking the time to join us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And also we have calling from the Olmsted NYC restaurant group, Max Katzenberg. Max, how are you today? I'm pretty good. You know, I'm used to doing my show in the Heritage Radio Network studio in Roberta's Pizza with a live, with guests in studio. That was always my rule. If you couldn't make it into the studio, you couldn't be on the show because there was always something extra special about having a face-to-face conversation with people. So these are the first phone-in shows I've ever done, really, over the course of 5 years, which is amazing. But I have to say, hearing all of you on the Zencastr recording is pretty great. So we learn something new and learn to appreciate new things in times like this. But we'll start our show like we always do. We usually talk about apps and technology. Ed, has there been a particular app or piece of technology that you've discovered that has been very helpful to you during these past few weeks?
I've never heard of Zoom before last week, and now it seems like I'm on it every single day. So,
what have you been using it for?
Interviews, business meetings, accountants. I mean, and pretty much most communications are happening on Zoom right now.
That's amazing. I think you're definitely not the only one. I had a conversation with some people as well from the sports world who had never heard of Zoom either. So it's been pretty interesting. How about you, Max? Is there a piece of digital tech or app tech that's been particularly useful for you?
I mean, like Chef Ed said, Zoom has been an incredible tool. Instagram for me has really morphed. It's not a new tool, but it's gone from pictures of food or pictures of cats or something, you know, maybe a little bit of a time waster, to a real resource for people to communicate about the initiatives that they're starting up. It's been great to see it really develop into something a little more meaningful.
I think also on the Instagram front, the live broadcasting function. I know that prior to this, I never quite paid that much attention to Instagram Live, but now it's become a resource of live streaming. There's a live streaming boxing class that I do a few times a week with Church Street Boxing. They have some great instructors. I know Cherry Bomb did their Jubilee through Instagram live stream. We have chefs doing cooking demonstrations, news, press conferences. So, you know, not just Instagram, but that live broadcast component has become so fascinating. And truly, truly a resource for everyday life and entertainment. It's really interesting. Anyway, we have Max and Ed here today to talk about the Lee Initiative, which is, if you want to follow along and check it out while you're listening to the episode, the website is leeinitiative.org. If you want to follow on Instagram, it's at Lee Initiative and at Chef Edward Lee and at Maker's Mark, who is the underwriter of the whole project. Ed, tell us, you know, what the project is and how it started.
Yeah, so basically, Lee Initiative is a nonprofit that we started 2 years ago with Lindsay Osasek, who's the director, and we were doing a program for women chefs in Kentucky, and it's for promoting diversity, and we do a lot of programs mostly in and around Kentucky in the region, and quite frankly, we have a staff of two people, or we had a staff of two people, and it was a very just a nice little nonprofit that we were running smoothly. And you know, when the restaurant closures hit in Kentucky, we have a very progressive governor, and he followed suit pretty quickly with some of the big cities. And by March 15th, we were basically told that we had to shut down all the restaurants in Kentucky. And that came as a huge hit to us, mainly because in Kentucky, we usually think of things happening in big cities first, and it kind of takes time to trickle down. But in this case, we had no time, and it happened pretty instantly. And so we pivoted pretty quickly and saw that, you know, I personally had laid off over 100 people. There's hundreds of restaurants in Louisville, thousands of people suddenly out of work, and, you know, just panicking and afraid, and you know, just confused. And so we saw this need that, you know, we had all this extra food. I have three restaurants in Louisville, so we consolidated all the food to 610 Magnolia, and we decided we would just feed staff and you know, people that I had to lay off, and anyone else in the neighborhood who was needing food. And it pretty quickly dawned on us that this was going to be a bigger issue. You know, the first night we opened without any outreach at all, about 300 people came in to see us.
When you say you opened, what does that mean?
We literally just, you know, the Monday night, we cooked some food and we put some food out family style and just invited, you know, this wasn't public. We just mm-hmm. invited our staff and friends and family to just come by. And you know, we had a lot of neighborhood people come by, and we knew that this was going to be a need that was bigger than just our close, you know, family of restaurant people. So Lindsay made a call to Maker's Mark, who we were partners with already on the Women Chefs program. And to their credit, they quickly stepped up and said, you're right, this is not something that is local to Kentucky. This is not something that's a Louisville problem. It's a national problem. And let's see how your program does. Let's do yours first and see how it does. So that next day, which was Tuesday, I believe March 17th, you know, we put out a social media post. We got some local news, and then we opened up a relief kitchen. You know, 300 people showed up that first day. There's a line of cars blocking traffic for blocks. Wow. Grown men crying, families. I mean, it was really hard emotionally. And Maker's Mark took one look at the line and the people, and they said, we have to go nationwide with this. So, we quickly mobilized, and I have a restaurant in DC as well. So the next thing we did was to transform the DC restaurant into a relief kitchen. And then we quickly went to Nancy Silverton in LA and Eduardo Jordan in Seattle. And those were the next two kitchens that we mobilized. And I think all of them were mobilized by the end of the week. And when we saw how successful those programs were, we went back to Makers and said, listen, we need to find money and keep going. And, you know, that's when I called these guys from actually Eduardo Jordan gave me Greg's number. And I called them right away, and they were so quick to jump on board and have been amazing partners. And I mean, every single city we open up in, we just, you know, we see a need. The chefs are just so amazing with their, you know, with their donations of time and energy and money and all that they do. It's been the one bright spot in otherwise a really ugly past few weeks.
Well, it's amazing how quickly you were able to pivot and respond and reach out to Maker's Mark to help support you. The economical support, the financial support is so critical. Restaurants are so used to donating their time and donating product as much as they can, which is amazing considering that their profit margins are so low. But in this instance, there simply are no resources, or there's a very, very small finite amount. How does it work financially? I mean, just in the broad strokes, because restaurants are able to get some financial support to run these programs so that there's a small cycle of some economic positivity adjacent to just the ability to be able to then donate, you know, meals to people who are in need.
Yeah. And so the great thing about this program is it's really kind of, it helps in two ways. You know, obviously the bigger mission is to help feed people who are in need and give them supplies. But it also helps to activate the restaurant and, you know, every restaurant that we activate, is able to hire back some of their staff. And so basically it, you know, right now we have a lot of unemployed restaurant workers, that did nothing wrong. That they're out of work for no fault of their own. They're very able, they're capable, and they're willing to work. There's just not work out there. So, you know, by offering people jobs, it helps to keep a little bit of the economy going. So Makers basically gives enough funds to seed this project for about 2 weeks. What we found, which has been great, is that every time we activate a kitchen, the food donations come pouring in. The donations from the public from each community pour in. So with all the food donations plus any donations that come in monetarily, we're able to track that. They can choose. So if anyone donates, they go on our website, they can choose which city that their money goes to, and we track it, and that money goes right back to the restaurants to keep this program going. When we started this 2 weeks ago, well, I guess now 3 weeks. You know, we came up with a 2 week mark because that's how long we thought the shutdown was going to be, foolishly. And you know, 2 weeks ago we all were kind of naive and thought, oh, you know, after 2 weeks things will get back to normal. And obviously now we're in the thick of it and we're seeing that this is easily a 4, 6, you know, maybe 8 week ordeal. And what is really critical now is that as the weeks go on, that's when people are running out of money, running out of food. And that's when this, like every single week that goes by, this program gets more and more critical. Because, you know, it's, you know, you, for a lot of restaurant workers, maybe they had, you know, a month's worth of savings, maybe less. And it's about time now when you know, bills are coming up, and it's getting really critical.
Well, we know from all of the activist work from the industry that the restaurant industry in the United States is $1 trillion, and it's 4% of our gross domestic product, and it's about 16% of the American workforce. I think it's something like 1 in 5 people works in restaurants or something like that. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just a tremendous part of the population. So it's a
tremendous part of the American economy too. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the one thing that we are, we're seeing, you know, our small business restaurants collectively are a huge part of the American economy. We pay a lot in taxes. You know, we employ millions of people, and it's really important that we support, you know, the backbone of our industry, which is all the restaurant people. And it's, you know, when I always say, when you go to a restaurant and you have a lovely meal, you know, you may interact with a few people, and for most people out there, they don't quite realize how many people it takes to bring that restaurant experience to you. You know, all the phone receptionists, the hostesses, the dishwashers, the porters. There's so many people that restaurants employ, and we can't forget about them. Because when this is over and there is something of a restaurant industry left to pick up, we're going to need them back. And we can't turn our backs on them right now when they're the most in need.
So, Ed, you said you reached out to the team at Olmsted. Max, tell us what it's like in a practical sense to convert your restaurant into a program like this to provide for your community. I think it would be great for other restaurant owners and workers who are listening to have some idea of what it would take for them to do the same thing if they're so inclined.
Yeah. This has been the hardest time of our careers. I mean, from Friday the 13th through that Tuesday, there were five days where it really just felt like the ground was moving underneath us. And, you know, we were pivoting the business and cutting services and talking about going delivery only. And finally on that Tuesday, we decided to shut it down entirely and lay off and furlough, you know, our entire staff. We're 60 between the two restaurants. And we had a few days there afterwards to really get out of the Olmsted micro bubble and feel the enormity of what was happening, you know, across the country, but especially, you know, in our New York City restaurant community, where 250,000 people were essentially laid off. And yeah, it was before the increased unemployment benefits were put in. That was before CARES. And we started really hearing from our people about their personal financial security, their concerns about that, and the food scarcity questions. So when we spoke to, Chef Eduardo Jordan, who's a friend of ours, my partner, the chef Greg Backstrom of Olmsted, and Eduardo worked together ages ago. When we heard what he was doing with Lee Initiative, you know, we called him immediately and said, "Oh my God, that is so amazing! You know, is there any way we could get involved?" And in a matter of hours, Olmsted was becoming a food bank. I mean, for us, it was just like here. I mean, not only is there a need, I would say there's a dire need, and it's not just a dire need for the workforce, for the community, but there's also a dire need. People are really compelled right now to contribute, and they don't know how. And the Food Bank Through Lee Initiative has been just an incredible catalyst for the community to come together. Not only are we working with chefs, but our vendor partners, our grocery stores are all different kinds of suppliers. They're hearing about what's happening and they all want to do something and they're all contributing in a really meaningful way. You know, we're seeing a lot of coordination between the medical field and the restaurants now, which has just been incredible. It's extraordinarily rewarding. And it does take a pivot, obviously, as far as the day-to-day, you know, from going to dine-in service, to serving. You know, we would usually at most serve 130 guests, per service, per dinner service at Olmsted. And now we're preparing to serve 250, 350 guests, per day. But it's something that everybody's really, really excited to be doing. And it's something that's been extraordinarily rewarding when you talk about that line of people who are having financial scarcity, food scarcity, and being able to get a little bit of relief.
Well, I mean, that's it's an amazing opportunity. It's an amazing opportunity to kind of keep the wheels in motion and keep communities going in so many different ways. We are going to take a quick break right now and find out who the underwriter is of this show to see who's keeping our Heritage Radio Network community going. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. We are kind of like public radio, and we also rely on the generosity of our community, of our members who are listeners like you, underwriters, and grants. So stay tuned and find out who the amazing company is that's supporting this show.
This episode is brought to you by the Michigan Cherry Committee. A cherry isn't just a cherry. When it comes to tart cherries, the wonderfully U.S.-grown Montmorency tart cherry variety is the cherry with more. They're available year-round, dried, frozen, canned, juice, and concentrate. U.S. Montmorency tart cherries are also one of America's superfruit, which means they're good for you. tart cherries contain many antioxidants and beneficial phytonutrients, including anthocyanins, the pigments that give tart cherries their bright red color. And don't forget about flavor. U.S. Montmorency's unique sour-sweet profile make them an excellent addition to yogurt, oatmeal, salads, trail mix, and of course, a classic cherry pie. Learn more about the wonderfully U.S.-grown Montmorency tart cherry at choosecherries.com.
Well, if you're just joining us and you're wondering what the hell you clicked on, this is Tech Bites, the weekly show on the Heritage Radio Network, where we talk to innovators and influencers in the food tech space. And for the past 3 weeks or so, we've been talking to innovators and influencers in the restaurant space who have made amazing pivots in their businesses to respond to the coronavirus pandemic and help not only their businesses, but the communities around them. Today, we are talking to Chef Edward Lee of the Lee Initiative, the LeeInitiative.org. Actually, it's just LeeInitiative.org, is a project with Maker's Mark where it essentially allows restaurants to turn into community kitchens and provide free meals and resources to restaurant workers and people in their community. If you want to be a part of it, go to LeeInitiative.org. You can follow them on social media at Lee Initiative, at Chef Edward Lee, and at Maker's Mark. We also want to give a shout out to Lindsay Ulf. I'm not going to pronounce your last name correctly. Lindsay
Ofstasik.
Say it one more time.
Ofstasik.
Who is the manager and the brain power behind the whole initiative, who couldn't join us today. Take a look at their website. They are currently in 15 restaurants across the country. It's a pretty amazing program. One of the participating restaurants is Olmsted NYC with Chef Greg Baxton and Max Katzenberg. They have also founded the New York Hospitality Coalition, which you can find at NYHOSP Coalition, which is a resource for the 25,000 restaurant businesses in the city, which employs over 250,000 workers. Max, can you tell us a little bit about what the New York Hospitality Coalition is?
Yeah, I mean, the Hospitality Coalition started, the week that we closed, there was this real crunch that was happening the Friday after our businesses were forced to close, the financial crunch. You know, the government, for medical reasons, closed all restaurants to dine-in service. And what that did for us is cut our cash flow off overnight, essentially. The Friday after the closure, the quarterly and monthly sales tax bills were due for New York restaurants, for New York State restaurants. And our payroll for the prior week was also due. And, you know, the government was so focused on the medical emergency, as they should be, there wasn't full awareness of the financial crunch that they were putting the operators in. And what we saw was operators being pretty much forced to choose between making their payroll or paying their sales tax and having very significant consequences for that. So we sprung to action. You know, we unified our network, and we formed the coalition with that as our major call to action, which was to postpone the penalty and interest for that sales tax payment. It's basically deferring the payment. And in 24 hours, you know, there was not just us. There were many, many people, you know, communicating to the governor's office that that needed to happen. But within 24 hours, they had changed their mind. You know, Thursday at 4 p.m., they said they're not moving it. Everyone needs to pay. And, you know, by Friday, they had changed their mind. Friday at 11 in the morning. So, you know, the whole effort really snowballed from that as the enormity of the economic crisis really started to set in. And, you know, we learned about CARES and what was going to be in CARES and how ineffective that's going to be for the hospitality industry. You know, the coalition has just grown and grown. And you know, the goal for it is to really be a resource for our operators as well as our workforce to come and triage, you know, this crisis, you know, for themselves. You know, we're asking ourselves, how can we protect as many of these 250,000 jobs in New York City, 865,000 jobs in New York State, and there, I think it's 11 or 12 or 13 million in the country. How many of those jobs are going to be there at the end of this? And, you know, CARES CARES and the PPP. They have an enormous blind spot for the hospitality industry. And what we're turning our attention to now is really educating our representatives and the general public as to why that is, right? On the surface, it seems like something that's very appealing. And the fact of the matter is it's not impactful barely at all for restaurants, for anybody that doesn't have employees for that matter. And we need to motivate them to create a stabilization fund for the hospitality industry that's going to get it back on its feet. Now, we're not just talking about 11 million Americans that work in restaurants, or 13 million, whatever the number is. We're also talking about the supply chain. You know, there are tens of millions of more people, more Americans that are supported by the restaurant industry. You know, the restaurant industry is the last link on a very complicated, very dynamic supply chain, from your farmer to your fisherman to your linen supplier to all the truck drivers. I mean, there's tens of millions of more people. And if these...
I'm waiting for somebody to do a really great infographic on that.
We're working on it. We're working on it.
Oh, are you really?
We're working.
You know, something animated would be great. You know, the New York Times has so many of these great infographics that show, you know, the density of things and the spread of things and the domino effect of things. And people isolate restaurants as, you know, economically in terms of what's happening in that brick and mortar space, but the domino effect is,
I mean,
is
we're working on that intently. You know, we've created a model that shows just how large the shortfall is for hospitality operators. You know, I think they're getting 15% of the cash that's really required to reopen, and what these small operators are going to be forced to choose between is saddling themselves with, you know, a lifetime's worth of debt to reopen their business in an environment that they cannot project how much revenue and profit there's going to be after this crisis, right? So they're going to have to personally guarantee or put up their house to reopen their business or close, right? And many, many, many people, if they choose to go into severe debt to reopen, are going to close. You know, we are not just talking about a little bit of cash for each business, you know, to do their first produce order. I mean, we pay our bills from 45 days ago with cash that we received today with revenue. So there is an entire supply chain that's going delinquent here. And what the PPP is intended to do is to get people off of unemployment and back to work. And the entire forgivable portion of that loan, the entire grant portion, is based on having payroll. But we don't have any payroll. We're not allowed to be open. So we're going to have to create a bunch of payroll to get a grant for payroll. And then we could use a tiny little sliver of that for our operating costs, stick it towards rent. But it's a net zero effect for restaurants. Maybe a 1 out of 10 effect for restaurants. It's a very, very dangerous moment. And you know, you see the cruise industry, the airline industry, you know, these sectors who have, you know, the shiny name, getting stabilization funds and receiving more direct support. And the reason for that is not because they are even close to as impactful on the economy. I mean, the airlines and the cruise, they're doing 50 to 100 billion a year. We're doing a trillion a year. We just do not have, the infrastructure in Washington. You know, we're very splintered. We're very splintered, right? Because of the profitability of the businesses and because of how many there are. And
it's also, restaurants are a network of small independent operators who are not typically unified for the purpose of, you know, lobbying in Washington. And on the one hand, that, you know, is obviously proving to be detrimental from a government policy point of view. But the independent nature of restaurants has proven to be a strength in some ways, because I think it's what allows you all to, you know, go forward and do the work that you're doing now. I mean, it's certainly ominous to talk about what happens in the future when things reopen and business comes back to life. But I'd like to go back to Ed and ask him, you know, when you first started and you thought 2 weeks things would go back to normal, you know, quote, air quotes, normal, whatever that was. We look at the news now and we look at Europe still being, you know, very much at home and staying at home. We look at Asia that tentatively reopened for business and is now starting to reclose again. When you look at your program now, What is the next 2 weeks, months? How far forward are you looking to continue to be funding the Lee Initiative?
We are, you know, we think this is definitely going to continue on for the next month. We try and look at weeks, not months, because sometimes it's a little staggering to look at it that far ahead. And so while I kind of keep an eye and watch the news carefully and keep an eye open for what's going to happen over long term, Lindsay and the team is really just trying to keep every kitchen open week by week. We are trying right now to just get every restaurant that's open funded till the end of April, which I think by all measures, we still see the restaurant closure continuing to the end of April. We are at the same time trying to raise more funds to activate at least four other kitchens by the end of next week. The tough part about this for us is that, you know, we are small nonprofits still. Even though we've raised quite a bit of money, we're still small. And it's just so disheartening because I get a call, multiple calls every day from Chattanooga, Tennessee, to Iowa, to Portland, to Richmond, Virginia, saying, hey, can you come here to our city? Because we need help too. And it breaks my heart because you just can't say yes to everyone. And it just is emotionally takes a toll because I know it's every city, every town, every village, every hamlet out there is suffering. And the toll that it's taking on everyday families is just immense. If we can get funded through the end of April, that's amazing. If we can add three more kitchens, that would be huge. And then we'll take it from there. I think we'll see. I mean, at this point, we're strategizing for another 6 weeks.
What type of funding are you looking for, if you can talk about it here, and in case there are any, you know, super wealthy individuals or people who are working in companies?
Are very nice. it doesn't really matter. You know, when we opened in Louisville on March 16th, the word got out. We raised about $18,000 in 2 days. And that all came from $5, $10, and $15 donations.
That's amazing.
And it was donated by people who were also struggling. Mm-hmm. And that meant so much to me. And it also means that people care. People care about the restaurant industry. We don't want to live in a world where the only restaurants are big chain restaurants and cookie cutter fast food places. It's just not the world that we've become accustomed to. You know, it's not the place where you're going to go for a birthday party, celebrate an anniversary, a wedding. It's not the place that you're going to go on a first date. We need these restaurants. They are a part of the fabric of the American life right now. And people do care. And we're seeing donations come in from, from NFL quarterbacks to, famous actors in Hollywood. I mean, it runs the gamut. And to your average person, you know, who's a school teacher who says, I love coming to your restaurant once a year for my anniversary, and I don't want that to end. And so we're just seeing it is amazing when you think about the broad spectrum of people who love independent restaurants. I mean, it's a silly thing to think about, but I mean, it is one of the most diverse audiences of people out there. So it's kind of the one thing that everyone can agree on.
Yes.
Is that
we all eat.
People love great food. Yeah.
They do. And they're very prideful about the places in their communities and who makes the best this and who makes the best that. And it's also something that people can participate on their own, you know, on an everyday way.
And think about all the restaurants in your community that come out and step up to the plate whenever there's a charity need, you know,
yes.
Whether it's a tornado or a hurricane and restaurants step up and donate food and money and resources, or, you know, if it's for the homeless, or if it's a shelter and you need a gift certificate, you know, or raise money for a school. I mean, restaurants are so much more than just feeding food. They become a part of that community. And part of what we're doing right now is saying, like, we have to give back to those people who have stepped up time and time again for every charity under the sun. And even though it's very hard for restaurant people to admit it, because we're very prideful and we work very hard, but you know, at this moment, it is our time to ask for help. I don't know a single restaurateur in the entire country and probably the world who's sitting pretty. You know, we are all collectively suffering. So, you know, this is our time to ask for help.
So to close out the show on that note, tell us today, right now, people who are listening to this episode, what's the most important thing they can do to help the Lee Initiative right now?
You know, we need money. You know, flat. That's just pretty much it. You know, you can go on our website and donate. You can choose which city and which fund to donate to. But you know, further than that, wherever you live, there's an independent restaurant scene. Go out, support them, buy gift certificates, buy dinners from them. If they're doing takeout meals, go buy dinner from them. Go show them some love. You know, figure out who the food banks are in your local community. Give them what they need. Reach out to the charity organizations in your community that are helping the restaurant industry. There are plenty of grassroots movements out there. And just anything you can do to support, there's plenty of ways you can help restaurants right now.
And Max, is there something that people can do to help the Olmsted Community Kitchen?
Well, absolutely. You know, if you know somebody with any resources that, you know, could be distributed, please email us, you know, contact@olmstednyc.com. You know, if you'd like to donate, of course, you know, through the Lee Initiative website, or if you'd like to volunteer in any way, you know, reach out. You know, it's an all hands on deck effort.
Will there come a time when people donating their time from their homes will be useful? I was having a conversation on the last episode of Tech Bites, which was the Dining Bonds Initiative, which is a website that is a global aggregator of dining bonds to purchase from restaurants today to utilize in the future with a little bit of a savings. They are looking at a model of starting to ask people to volunteer time. So many people want to get involved, but I do think in the short term, you know, physical resources, money, and, you know, product may kind of evaporate as we are longer and longer, you know, staying at home. Is there a way people can volunteer time for you, or volunteer some sort of effort that's virtual from their homes?
Yeah. I mean, it volunteers are hard right now because of the COVID-19 crisis and because of our social distancing precautions. In our kitchens, we really discourage using volunteers. We don't know where they've been, who they've been in contact with, and we just can't have that many people in the restaurant at any given time for the safety of our workers. In all the kitchens that are activated, the entire kitchen staff knows each other outside of working at the relief kitchen. They are quarantined, so there's no other contact between the workers and their families. There's no other contact, and it's a really safe place. In all things considered, as a workplace, it's actually very safe. There's zero contact with the public. Mm-hmm. We have systems where people can pick up the food without ever coming within 6 feet of a staff member. So we really need to keep that intact, because we have to follow the rules of safety first. Having said that, if things get to a place of you know, again, quote unquote, a little more normal, and we can take volunteers, you know, we'll put the word out on that. But right now, we are discouraging any actual physical volunteers.
Could people make phone calls or send emails or things like that from their homes? I mean, running a successful business is certainly, you know, especially a nonprofit, certainly you have the hands-on on the ground, but how sure, much yeah. of your day we, now is spent making phone calls to people?
Yeah, and we do, you know, again, it's you know, for us, it's about spreading the word and just yep. letting people know that we're here and we're helping them. We're working this week, actually, on some outreach to the Latino community, mm-hmm. Many of whom are, you know, have devoted their lives to the restaurant business. Mm-hmm. You know, some have a language barrier, some are undocumented, and some have a fear of just going out to places that are, you know, have the potential for danger for them. And so we're working on an outreach program right now to reach that community and to say that we're here for you too, and that these meals and supplies are also intended for you, and that, you know, these restaurants are safe havens, that we're not cooperating with any kind of detention centers or ICE. So that's just something that we're working on this week, because we know that there are so many Latinos and other people for whom English is not a first language, that you know, have been the backbone of our industry, and right yeah. now they're suffering too, and for many who are undocumented, none of the stimulus package is going to trickle down to them at all.
No, nope.
You know, there's no safety net at all. And so, you know, we need to look out for them too.
Well, I want to thank Chef Ed Lee and Max Katzenberg for taking time out of their very busy days today to talk with us. If you want to get involved in the Lee Initiative, visit them at leeinitiative.org. On Instagram at Lee Initiative. It's a great program. It's national restaurants converting into food pantries to support those in need, sponsored by Maker's Mark. You can follow them at Maker's Mark. Follow Chef at Chef Edward Lee. And then in New York City, we have at Olmsted NYC. The sister restaurant is at Maison Yaki, Yaki. And Chef Greg Backstrom and Max Katzenberg. Max, is there any last thoughts about what people can do for Olmsted if they'd like to help and support?
No, I mean, I think that we've really covered it. And, you know, thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to talk about the Food Bank and the New York Hospitality Coalition. Thank you.
Well, we are hoping to be a resource during this pandemic of stories that make us feel great, because people like you all out there doing good things and helping our communities. It's really wonderful to hear people springing into action. And, you know, my hope is that people will be inspired to spring into action themselves. We know from the restaurant community, the way we respond to disasters of all sorts, that you feel so much better when you go to work and you put something positive into the world. There are people wondering what they can do. Maybe this will inspire them to participate in one of these programs or start something in their community. And there are also, you know, sponsors and people who can maybe help on a larger scale. And then there are people who do need help. And hopefully this will be a resource for somebody who maybe lives in Brooklyn next to Olmsted, who might, you know, stop by this afternoon or tomorrow morning to, you know, pick up something that they need. So if you are out there and you have a great story of something that's happening in your community, reach out to us, techbytes@heritageradionetwork.org. You can find us on social media at techbyteshrn. We would love to hear from you. We are going to continue to put Tech Bites on the air. Heritage Radio Network is committed to producing all their full roster of shows, and we are looking at everything from hospitality industry to farming to food supply to, you know, stories of what people are doing, you know, around the world during this time. And having a community has never been more important, and hearing each other's voices has never been more important. So get in touch, listen in, and we will see you on the other side of this. I'm Jennifer Liuzzi, and this is Tech Bites. Tech Bites is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Just enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.